It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Listen to me, older and I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
It is Monday. Time to recap everything that happened over the weekend sports-wise and also look ahead because we've got some big sports events coming up tonight and throughout the week. In fact, yesterday we even got some bonus basketball coming to the Summit City. We'll tell you about that. Also on the show today, we've got the voice of the Purdue Boilermakers, Rob Blackman, and for equal time, we've also got the legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher, who will join us for our 15 minutes with Fish. And to add on top of that, the big announcement, you just heard Adam mention it in the sports update, is that Paul Cassaro, former assistant coach at Purdue Fort Wayne, has been named the head coach of IU Indy. Now, here's what's odd. Okay, they put out the message that he was hired, and the university put this out, that he's hired as the next head coach of Indiana University, Indianapolis, IU Indy. But they aren't officially IU Indy yet, so I guess he's really hired as part of the transition. He's officially the IUPUI coach now until the end of June, and then it will transition to where it's IU Indianapolis. And that's kind of like what happened here in Fort Wayne, where we had IPFW. And then when the split happened between Indiana and Purdue, you had to kind of pick sides. I don't know if it was really picking sides, but the bottom line is it became Purdue Fort Wayne. And down in Indianapolis, it's becoming Indiana University of Indianapolis. But Paul Cassaro named as the next men's basketball head coach after they had a rather difficult season this past season. In fact, it's been kind of a difficult run down there. And I wonder what he sees about that job, that he feels like it's the right opportunity, because he was running a very successful Division II program with the Greyhounds down in Indianapolis. Doesn't have to relocate to take the job.
Makes things easy.
But he will have a new business address downtown. So we'll talk to him coming up at about 5:35, 5:40 this afternoon after we talk to Don Fisher. Adam, how was your weekend? Mine, I will be honest. I told you I'm having some back issues, really bad back issues. A lot of pain in my back. And I think it's just because I didn't get my fat butt off the couch all weekend because I was trying to watch as much basketball as possible. How about your weekend?
Oh, yeah. A lot of basketball. Little break for Comet Hockey on Saturday, but I still had a game up on the TV in the studio.
You worked the Comet game.
Yeah, I didn't go. Yeah.
It wasn't like you took a break because you wanted to listen to the Comets while the games were on. You actually were paid to run the board for the Comets.
Wait, I get paid?
Well, maybe they haven't told you yet.
Anyway, but no, it was a fun weekend of NCAA basketball mostly overall.
Fortunately, I was able to put my account on your direct deposit, and you've been making me money every Saturday night. It's like placing a winning bet. Adam, you working this Saturday? Got to plan my budget for next week.
I got you.
So anyway, I certainly it was fun to start the weekend with the Purdue Boilermakers on Friday night. And the Boilermakers are still around, folks. Guess what?
They avoided becoming a joke again.
All of the Purdue fans that couldn't breathe all season because they didn't want to be optimistic. They didn't want to think that maybe this team could go further than the teams of the past that have failed early in the tournament. And then all the Purdue haters who just kept rubbing it in. Yeah, we'll see what Purdue does in March, because these games don't really matter. It's not about what happens in January and February or November. It's about what happens in March. Well, you know, the world has gotten a little back to normal because the Purdue Boilermakers, who have been the number one team in the country at points this year, number three team in the country right now, number one seed, they kind of just cruised on along over the weekend. In fact, that win yesterday against Utah State was just absolute domination over a very good Utah State team.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Painter was asked about, hey, you know, you're... They had that dumb question that you sent me about before the game.
That was before the game when they we don't have that question on audio, do we?
I don't, but man.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you what, that is a journalist that probably should not be given a credential to any more future games. Because if that is what you're going to open your mouth to ask, a question that's built on the premise, statistically, analytically, it's pretty obvious you're going to win tomorrow. I mean, and he's like, well, if you look at all the stats and everything,
and the history of the programs.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that you're going to win tomorrow.
Painter did not like that one bit.
You see his eyebrows get raised.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, though, to his credit, because there's some coaches that would have just ripped that guy a new something, asking how you could be so stupid to ask that question. If I was a coach, I might have been one of them. Because listening to it, I thought, how could anybody waste time in a press conference asking this stupid question? And building it around the premise that you're telling a coach you've got no chance to lose your next game because you are statistically so dominant to your opponent. We're already going to talk about the next game.
Yeah,
that was bad.
It's like, do you know what coach you're talking to, of what program, and do you know what happened last season
history,
at all? And
history of this program where you can't take anybody.
Matchups.
Yeah, I wonder what the statistics would have told that same reporter a year ago when it was Fairley Dickinson. Wow, it was just awful.
But credit to Purdue, they did then handle business against Utah State very handily.
Quite handily. And in fact, Utah State, it was very apparent somewhat early in that game, the Utah State was not going to be able to handle Zach Edey.
Yeah.
I was talking to Caleb McKinney this morning, and they were saying basically Utah State by halftime just decided to toss the towel in. They had no answer. They had no chance. They couldn't get stops. And it was too difficult to try to score against that Purdue defense. It was like they just went through the motions to finish up that game. Regardless, 39-point win over a team that won the regular season title in the Mountain West and a league that got six bids. That's a joke.
That is kind of a joke.
Do they have, what, one left? San Diego State?
Yeah.
I think it's the only one of the six that made it through the weekend.
Yeah, 46862, the text line. Somebody let us know it was a Utah State student reporter that asked Matt
was
Painter
really?
That question.
Who was throwing his own team under the bus? Really? I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, me neither. But hey,
well, Matt Painter won't have to worry about him anymore.
No, he learned a lesson, and I'm sure he'll take that back to the.
Yeah,
that's
one of those where he's.
You learned your lesson. Hopefully.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's prepare your questions a little bit better next time. Or maybe have somebody review your questions ahead of time.
Because there is a way you could have worded that question with that would have gotten a normal response. You could have said, Coach Painter, you've been in matchups that you've been favored in before. How do you get your team to not look at that and just play or something like that?
Yeah, something where you could have implied, how do you keep your team from looking past Utah State when you have such a statistical advantage against them?
Right. Yeah, it's a learning lesson. That's what he's in school for.
But it took him a long time, and every time he kept going, it's like it's getting worse. He's digging it deeper. It's basically like there's just no chance for your opponent at all in this game. So how do you not look ahead? It's like, well...
Let me tell you something.
Let's talk about reality now. This is the NCAA tournament where every team is good enough that on any given day, they could surprise someone else. So, and if anybody is going to be prepared not to overlook somebody, it has to be the Purdue Boilermakers at this point after the history that they have had in recent seasons. And it does seem to me like Zach Edey is on a mission right now.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's had two of his best games he's had all year. the first game, I mean, dominant. And then the second game in the first half. Now, the second half, he wasn't really needed all that much.
No.
But he still ended up with 23 points, 14 rebounds. But that first half, there was no defense for him. He had guys hanging on him, fouling him. He was finding ways to finish at the basket. If they get that Zach Edey and they continue to do what they did against Utah State, hitting almost 50% of their threes, they were 11 of 23 for 48% behind the three-point line. And that's been the question. Remember, we said the biggest thing for Purdue, they're going to have to hit shots because teams try to, you know, fall into the lane and sandwich in Zach Edey. You've got to make them pay for that. Well, Purdue hitting 11 threes, it almost is game over. And I think that's the way Utah State felt at halftime. Purdue out-rebounded Utah State 49-26, including 13 offensive rebounds. Fletcher Loyer has come around. Now, we've been very honestly critical of Fletcher at times because there have been times where it looked like maybe he was hitting a wall. And this sometimes happens where you just hit a point where you're just worn down, but then you get a second wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he had a stretch there where he was not good and not productive. And Matt Painter stuck with him, believing in him. And to Fletcher Loyer's credit and to Coach Painter's credit, Fletcher Loyer now is starting to look like Fletcher Loyer that Purdue needs if they're going to have a deep run in this tournament. Fletcher Loyer, 15 points. I think he only had one three.
Yeah, he took two and he made one, so 50% from three.
Yeah, and he got 15 points.
Yeah.
So it just tells you that, you know, he was more than just a spot-up three-point shooter. He wasn't a Jack Golke.
No, not a Jack Golke. He did dribble it.
Jack Golke became human again on Saturday.
He sure did.
Up next for Purdue, it's Gonzaga, a familiar opponent. They played Gonzaga back in the Maui Classic back in November, and they'll play Friday night.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I think it'll be a more challenge than it was in Maui. I mean, Gonzaga's looked really good here in their tournament run.
Gonzaga's
so far.
Definitely better.
Yeah.
But Zach Edey didn't get smaller.
That's
so
true.
I mean, you've still got the same challenge you've got to deal with. Purdue only scored 73 points against Gonzaga in the first meeting, which is actually less than Purdue averages. But Gonzaga is getting the advantage of extra rest.
Yes.
Because the game's not till Friday. So the extra rest plus the opportunity to game plan and to work on how you want to defend. Do you want to show and then flare back out to your man? Do you want to actually go full double and rotate? How do you want to play that? I thought Purdue was very well prepared for the defenses that have been thrown at Zach Edey so far. Clearly, they had a game plan that they went to against Utah State that involved Trey Kaufman Wren because TKR was dominating that game. It was not Zach Edey doing all the scoring early. Trey Kaufman Wren scored the first 8 points of the ball game. And it's like, okay, you're going to throw guys at Edey.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let TKR just slide the baseline. And Zach Edey's a good enough passer and Purdue overall, they find the open man, and they took advantage of that.
Yeah, TKR did a great job of moving without the ball and just making really smart cuts and just finding a way to get open right near the basket. I also really appreciated seeing a contribution in some of these games from Miles Colvin. It's nice to see him get in and shoot some threes and make some threes. He was 3 of 5 and had 9 points, which, you know.
And it's kind of interesting because most coaches shorten their bench.
Yeah, he's kind of extended his.
So far, Purdue has extended theirs. Camden Heidi has gotten some extra minutes.
I've enjoyed seeing both of them have contributions.
Miles Colvin, they've given him some extra minutes. Now, Ethan Morton and Caleb Burst maybe not getting the minutes, but Purdue's going maybe more with a more athletic lineup.
Yeah, with some of these guards and forwards that can shoot. I like it.
Yep. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. So we mentioned Jack Golke. He became human again on Saturday. I think everybody had made him some kind of a god after that opening performance. But he ended up, Golke finished 6 of 17 from 3 against North Carolina State, played 42 minutes. And I think that impacted his shooting percentage because Jack Golke's a guy that, well, he's a sixth man for a reason. Okay. He's not a starter. during the course of the season, he's probably a guy that gives you 20, 22, maybe 24 minutes. And to go the extended minutes that he has gone in this tournament, 42 on Saturday, it probably wore down the legs a little bit because all three of his last three-point attempts hit the front rim. They were all short. What is that a sign of? That's a sign the legs are starting to get a little fatigued, and that's what we saw, I think, with Jack Golke. But he still had 22 points. Trey Townsend finished with 30 for Oakland, but they lost in overtime. And for Oakland, it was it was a series of things. They had poor execution on a final possession. They threw the ball away. They looked at it on replay. The officials got it right. A lot of people are like, oh, it hit his finger. It hit his finger. It did hit his finger. But Conway still followed through with his hand on the ball, even after the ball went through the finger of the defender, which meant it was off Oakland, and they did get the call right. I thought some of the announcers, the way they analyzed that game, was kind of bad. But that was a pretty clear call that they did get it right, gave it to North Carolina State. But it was just a poor execution of a final play with a chance to win the ball game. And so it ends up being tied over time. It was dominated by North Carolina State and Oakland falls. And the Cinderella run is over after one win over Kentucky. And the bank account freezes for all teams in the Horizon League.
Great run, though. Great run for the Oakland Golden Grizzlies.
I mean, they certainly added credibility to the conference and the type of conference that it is. Just remember, that is a team the Mastodons beat by 21 points.
In their arena.
In their arena. And then also a team that the Dons were ahead of, 57-53, with about 4 minutes left, and then lost at the Coliseum when Oakland finished on like an 18-6 run. And guess who had a couple of threes during that run?
Jack Golke. Mr. Golke.
Yeah. And DQ Cole hit a big three against us, too. And DQ Cole hit the big three against Kentucky from the corner that basically put the game away. But Oakland ends up falling. North Carolina State right now is the Cinderella. They kind of took the slipper away from Oakland.
They did.
In fact, I don't think at this point, do we have a lot of surprises?
Not particularly, no.
I mean, to me, it's like, okay, last year you had FAU, you had San Diego State.
Yeah, NC State is now the lowest seed remaining in the tournament at an 11 seed.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Hey, we've got another local college having some success. You know, first it was all about trying at the D3 level. We've got another Northeast Indiana college that is doing very well at the NAI level. In fact, you can't do better. And we'll talk about that coming up. Also, the Mastodons, what a win for the women's program. I mean, if you're not buying in right now to Maria Marcassano and the job that she is doing with Purdue Fort Wayne, it is unbelievable. And they might have had the best win in her tenure yesterday. We'll tell you about that. Adam's going to tell you more about what's happening in the world of sports. Here comes today's top headline.
All right, thanks, Brett. Well, NFL owners have approved a rule proposal to ban the swivel hip drop tackle the league announced today. The violation will result in a 15-yard penalty if flagged in games. The hip drop tackling ban proposal was written to address only a subset of the rugby-styling tackle that has spread around the NFL in recent years. The tackling technique often results in lower body injuries.
I have nothing to say. I mean, let's just put flags on the guys and make it what it's becoming.
Yeah, it's getting a little upsetting here. The Indianapolis Colts continue meeting prospects in the 2024 NFL Draft. Earlier this week, it was reported that Florida State cornerback Jerrion Jones has a top 30 visit scheduled with the Colts. Jones is an athletic and versatile corner that's enjoyed an excellent pre-draft process. And one more here story for you, checking in on the NCAA Women's Championship. It's the second round, and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish women get a win over the seventh-seeded Ole Miss Rebels. Maddie Westfeld had 20 points in the win, and it was a 71-56 win for the Lady Fighting Irish. Those are your top stories today, Brett.
And Indiana will be in action later tonight.
Yep.
Down at Simon Scott Assembly Hall. They're taking on Oklahoma. We'll talk to Don Fisher about that 1 hour from now. Taking your body home from a day of work on a Monday. Kind of feels like the day after. Like today's a downer. It's like the last 4 days, you know, all we had to do was turn on the TV and we knew there were multiple channels with foot basketball. You could pick and choose. You could find a game that was close. And now tonight, not much. But we have a radio game tonight. We have a Mastodons game coming to you on the radio starting at 6:45. In fact, probably a few of you wondering, wait, what is he here for? He's supposed to be traveling. Yes, I was supposed to be traveling. All I can say is over the weekend, this is part of playing in these mid-major type tournaments. I don't want to call them secondary, but that's kind of what they are because you have the NCAA, you have the NIT, and then you have a couple of other tournaments for teams that maybe get overlooked or they don't have available spots or maybe too many of those spots in the NCAA tournament and the NIT go to the power conference teams, the high majors. And so they try, there's a couple of groups out there. CollegeInsider.com is one. And then the CBI that try to have tournaments that are tailored toward the mid-majors. And the Mastodons decided to accept the bid to the CollegeInsider.com tournament. And, it started out with 9 teams getting a first-round bye because they had trouble filling the field because you can't fill it until you've got your NCAA field and then your NIT field and figure out what teams are still left. And because of the portal, there were a lot of teams at that point that decided they were too concerned they couldn't field teams or they would lose guys and they might lose the opportunity to recruit from the portal. The portal really has gotten in the way of a lot of stuff. We're going to have to talk to Don Fisher about the interference of the portal and not only what Indiana is trying to do and not playing in a postseason tournament, but the effects it has on players as well. I mean, think about the players that are stuck on rosters right now that have decided they're going to be leaving the team or the university program that they're on and they want to enter the portal, but they don't want to do it until that team gets beat out of the tournament. What they're doing is they're falling a week or two behind so many of the other players that are going to end up getting spots that they might have wanted, but they can't enter the portal. Just so it's not just coaches that have a problem with it. It's the players who have the right to enter the portal that aren't in there yet that might eventually be in there. Well, anyway, make a long story short, this CIT tournament has just been a little crazy. And the travel has gotten probably more than anyone expected. The Dons have to play Tarleton State. For those of you that don't know the geography, Tarleton State is a couple of hours from the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. So the Dons not able to get a flight out of Fort Wayne because it's spring break week. The Dons had to take a bus to Chicago and then get on a flight from Chicago to Dallas and then get on a bus and go another 2 hours to get to Tarleton State. They had almost 12 hours of travel time yesterday to play the game tonight. And in that process, trying to figure out if the radio guy was going along, eventually Saturday afternoon, they were able to find an affordable, because these flights are all like $1,000 or more. I mean, you also don't get a cheap ticket because you're buying it last second after you win. And then the money that's supposed to be there from the travel support that's provided by the tournament, sometimes I don't think that's happening. But the bottom line is there's a lot of budget issues trying to figure it out, sort it out. And the radio guy is like last on the priority list. And I get that. I mean, no one's happy to be the last guy on the list, but it is what it is. You've got to take your players. You've got to take your coaches. But the bottom line is it wasn't until Saturday afternoon that I found out they did have a ticket for me, but it was not going to be on the Chicago to Dallas flight. It would be direct from Fort Wayne. But it would arrive at Dallas at the same time as the team flight. So we would both just get on the bus and take the two-hour bus ride to Stephenville. Well, my flight got delayed.
Oh, man.
And 22 guys weren't going to sit at the Dallas airport after traveling for 10 hours and wait for the radio guy to show up 2 hours later. So I decided on my own, it would complicate things too much if I get on this plane and head to Dallas. So here I am. But we still have the broadcast for you. That's coming up at 6:45. 7 o'clock will be the tip. Mastodons and the Tarleton State Texans tonight.
Most original name in college sports.
Yeah, they. It's only like their fifth season of Division I basketball. They made the transition from Division II to Division I 5 years ago. Billy Gillespie is their coach, although he only coached the first four games of the season this year.
Huh.
And then due to health issues, he has not coached since. I just found this out on, I think, Saturday. And so he has not coached this team. It actually was taken over by an assistant, Joseph Jones, and all he did was go like 16-4 in the conference and win Coach of the Year in the WAC.
It's kind of like an Ohio State situation down there.
Yeah, and yeah, except the only problem, they can't give him the job because the job's not officially open.
No, and we do hope for the health, best of health for everybody.
Right, but we know he's had health issues before with his kidneys and all, so. And there's no real information as far as what the health issue is, other than the fact he had to take a leave and the assistant coach has taken over and done a terrific job with this ball club. So Don's at it tonight, but what a win by the Purdue Fort Wayne women yesterday. I mean, they are an underdog against Cincinnati from the Big 12. Purdue Fort Wayne has never beaten a Big 12 opponent in their history. And they pull off the upset, not only beating Cincinnati, but doing it on the road by a final margin of 26 points. The Mastodons win it 84-58 against the Bearcats, shooting over 41% from three. They shared the ball, 20 assists on their 30 made baskets. They were 12 of 14 at the free throw line. They raced out to a 32-12 lead in the first minute of the second quarter and never looked back, never allowed Cincinnati to really threaten. And what did they get as a reward for that impressive road victory? They get a home game in the next round of the WNIT. And coming up this Friday, the Mastodons will be at the Gates Center against St. Louis, who beat Northern Iowa.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so the Dons at home Friday night, 7 o'clock tip at the Gates Center in the third round, which I think is actually called the Super 16.
It is.
It will be the Super 16 round of the WNIT. So a lot of fun, a lot of success. I'll tell you what, if you don't want to be a part of this program right now, if you're a basketball player, female basketball player that's being recruited, you're crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about trending up. The Dons are now the only Horizon League team still playing after Green Bay got smoked by Tennessee over the weekend in the NCAA tournament, and Cleveland State got knocked out in their first game of the WBIT. So the Mastodons are the last man standing in both men's and women's basketball because Cleveland State men got beat earlier today in the CBI. We'll take a break. We come back. Rob Blackman, voice of the Boilermakers, will join us to talk about the weekend that was and the weekend that lies ahead. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Once again, we've got Mastodons basketball hitting the airwaves tonight at 6:45 with the pregame show. 7 o'clock, the tip as the Mastodons take on Tarleton State in the CollegeInsider.com tournament. It's the semifinals. A win by the Mastodons tonight. They head to a championship, which will be at Norfolk State coming up on Wednesday night. Want to talk about fun travel. not only was it an adventure to get to Tarleton, but I should just kind of tell you, well, I will later. I'll go through the itinerary of what it's going to take for the Dons to get from Stephenville, Texas to Norfolk, Virginia during a spring break week on last minute travel. Oh, it's crazy. You know, somebody doesn't have to worry about that because he works with the big boys. They got those charter flights. That's what we need. You know, they got to somehow arrange that all of us can get on those nice, luxurious, first-class charter flights like Rob Blackman, who joins us right now. Rob, good afternoon.
Hi, Brett. Actually, I am kind of interested to hear what that travel itinerary would look like. My goodness, there can't be anything pleasant about that.
No, imagine the weekend of spring break and you find out about a day ahead that you've got to book 23 tickets on an airplane to get from Fort Wayne, Indiana to Tarleton, which is in Stephenville, Texas, 2 hours outside of Dallas. It was an adventure. And the guys had to take a three-hour bus ride. They had to get a flight out of Chicago. It was the only place there was a big enough plane with enough lights to get 22 guys on an airplane to Dallas. And then from Dallas, a two-hour bus ride to Tarleton. They had 12 hours of travel yesterday to get down to this game. And that's actually light compared to what they will face if they win tonight and have to get to Norfolk for a championship on Wednesday.
You know this, Brett. If that headache does indeed happen, they'll just be happy as clams because they know they're playing for a championship.
Yeah. The kids seem to have much more resiliency and bounce back from those kind of trips. I will feel that in my back for like 3 weeks. But Rob, I got to ask you, before we get started about the actual play on the court, I got to talk about game times because you had a little bit of a mess on Friday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And if it's my understanding that the networks are kind of calling the shots on tip times, trying to fit them into certain slots and windows for particular networks. It didn't really work out all that well on Friday. Purdue had to wait, and the crowd had to rush in, rush out. That was a little bit of a mess, and something's got to be done about that, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm immune to that, only because obviously we were already in there and had started our pregame show. Obviously, I could see that there were no fans in the stands leading up to the start of the game because they, and what you're talking about there are two different sessions, two games in each session, and you have to completely clear the building from session number one. And clear the building, by the way, I think there's some confusion on what that means. That doesn't just mean all the fans walk out of the gates. That means they have to do a quick sweep of all the bathrooms. They have to make sure for security purposes that there's no, you know, suspicious packages or things laying around. So this takes a little bit. This isn't just like, hey, everyone walks out the door and then the next group comes in. It does take a little bit of time. And look, by the way, to the Gainbridge Fieldhouse staff, they did the best they could do.
Matter of fact,
I thought they went above and beyond. It's just they're handed an impossible task there. But yes, while I was immune to it when it was happening, I was not immune to it after the fact when I ran into a number of Purdue fans back at the team hotel who were really discouraged about the fact that they were not there, not only for the tip-off, but, you know, many of those folks didn't get there until closer to actually halftime, maybe about the four-minute media timeout of the first half. So, yes, why in the world they schedule those things the way they do, I haven't the slightest idea. And keep in mind, we actually had a few extra minutes, Brett, to get folks in the building because they had to swap out one of the rims. One of the rims on the north end, I don't know if it was broken or defective, but after that game in front of us, they swapped that thing out. So that took an extra 15 minutes to do that. And yet they still couldn't get fans, all the fans in the building on time. So, yeah, again, that's above my pay grade. I don't know who makes those decisions, why they make those decisions, but it certainly seems like that could be something that could be done much, much more efficiently than the way it's done currently.
Just one of the things that billions of dollars paying for the rights to the tournament, I guess, get you. But, you know, it's going to come up this weekend, too, Rob, because the Boilermakers put into the 7:30 slot, and there's a game after them. So, and this is in Detroit in the Eastern time zone. There's going to be two teams on the court still playing when the calendar gets flipped over from Friday to Saturday.
Yeah, we had that, of course, this past Friday night. The two teams played after us, Utah State in their Montana State. Beg your pardon, not Montana State, TCU. Their game didn't end until well after midnight. And I mentioned this on the radio in the pregame show yesterday. That was really unfair to those Utah State kids. There's no way they could have gotten back to the hotel till maybe 1:30 in the morning, maybe.
Maybe.
And then they turned around and played an afternoon game on Sunday against us. I mean, that's and look, you're always looking for a competitive advantage if you're an opponent. But come on, that was not fair to those guys. And again, why these things are structured the way they are, I haven't the slightest idea. But it can be really frustrating at times.
It does. It seems frustrating sometimes for the coaches, the players, the fans, and then even the home viewers who, like last night, a lot of the best games happened well into Sunday evening, even late Sunday night. When you've got the window all day long, I don't know why there's not more games that are played during the day. And maybe it's your point that teams are playing later on Friday night, and so they don't want to bring them back any earlier than they have to. But just seems like TV's got too much of a grasp on game times. Let's talk about Purdue, because, Rob, I don't know if you heard it, but a lot of people were saying that Purdue was going to get beat in the first game because that's what happens in March, right?
Well, I heard it. Yes, absolutely, I heard it. And I tried to quickly remind them that this team has now been to five Sweet 16s in the last 7 years. Look, it's the low-hanging fruit. It's the easy narrative to say, well, Purdue just keeps losing to lower-seeded teams. Well, sure, and that is fair if all you want to do is look back at the last three seasons. But I would remind folks that in one of those three seasons, that loss to a 15 seed happened in the Sweet 16. And that was not a first-round game. That was a St. Peter's team that had already beaten Kentucky, had already beaten Murray State. So their Cinderella run was off and running in both slippers. Thank you, glass slippers. Their Cinderella. So the fact that Purdue lost to them, I could sort of get that. Now look, the loss last year to a 16 seed, obviously that's a tough pill to swallow. I do understand that, but I do know this: there are always going to be folks that are going to hate on your team for whatever reason, whether it's justified or not. And if Purdue loses somewhere along the way here, as a number one seed, unless it's against a number one seed in the Final Four of the national championship game, then Purdue is going to once again have lost to a lower seed. And that's all you're going to hear about. Mm-hmm. And I would argue, well, when you're the number one seed, that's really about your only chance to lose to a. There are no zeros.
You better win the tournament.
Yeah, you can't lose to a zero seed because they don't exist.
Oh, man.
If you're losing, you're probably losing to a lower seed. But anyway, yes, to get to your point, Brett, I got a little off tangent there. But yes, I hear it. I think a lot of folks hear it. But those who understand a little bit about basketball also know that if you've been to five Sweet 16s in the last 7 years, you're probably doing something right.
Yeah, and to build the question, and that's kind of why I was asking about that in a joking manner, it's Zach Edey looks almost like a guy possessed, like he is so focused that, you know, you don't want to get in his way right now. And Matt Painter alluded to it earlier this year that, you know, you don't want to give him anything that gives him extra motivation. Clearly, he has something that is driving him in this postseason. Do you know what it is?
I do not know what it is, but I see the same look that you see, Brett. I noticed it yesterday. In the pregame warm-up line, he just had this look on his face, and I did not say this on air. I said this commercial, at a commercial break to my broadcast partner, Bobby Riddell. I said, man, I think Zach's about to have another big game. He just has this angry look on his face. Mm-hmm. For those of your listeners that are old enough to remember the television series The Incredible Hulk with David Banner, that look that David Banner would get just before he turned into The Incredible Hulk, Zach had that look on his face yesterday, and I'll tell you what, I sure hope he keeps that look on his face this weekend in Detroit, because when he is emotionally and mentally in that particular state, he's a pretty dominant player.
He's full-blown green right now. He is the Hulk. I mean, there's no question about it, what he's doing and the performance. I mean, I thought over the weekend that may have been six of the best quarters strung together for Zach Edey, the game on Friday, the first half yesterday, that we've perhaps seen all year.
Well, that, boy, that, and look, I, to be fair to Grambling, You know, they don't see that type of height,
right,
nor strength in their conference on a day-to-day basis. But
neither did Fairleigh Dickens then, Rob. So, I mean, you know, let's be fair.
30 points and 21 rebounds, I don't care who you're playing. If you do that in an NCAA tournament game, you are putting yourself in rarefied air. And I'm not so certain, had Zach been forced to play, his regular 35, 36 minutes yesterday, he couldn't have got to those numbers again. He just wasn't needed, obviously, in the second half. So, I pinch myself every time here these last few games with him, because I'm thinking to myself, I am very fortunate getting an up close and personal look at one of the greatest players in not only Purdue basketball, but the numbers he's putting up now is putting him amongst the conversation for greatest players ever in the college game.
Purdue's put themselves in a situation where it is Maui part two, basically.
Yeah.
They're going to see some teams they saw in that Maui Classic back in November. Is that an advantage or is that a disadvantage, playing teams you beat earlier this year?
I think there's probably an argument for both. I do know this. We spoke with Paul Lusk, one of our assistant coach, on our post-game show yesterday, and he did mention how Gonzaga really does not resemble the team that we saw back in November there in Honolulu. I mean, they've changed up their starting lineup. They're starting big now, three bigs in the lineup. Ben Gregg is a guy who'd been playing off the bench for them in November. They've moved him in the starting lineup. They've gone with a really, really big lineup, Brett. We're talking 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet across the front line with three guys. So they're just a lot different team, at least of how they go about things now. They're more interior. The way they originate their offense, as opposed to what we saw in that game in Honolulu. And the other thing, Brett, is I pulled out the box score from that game from November, and it kind of quickly brought back to my memory that was not a well-played game. I mean, Purdue won 73-63, but neither team played well. Quite frankly, it was an ugly game for both teams. Purdue was, I think, 23% from three, and Gonzaga was like 18% from three. I think we had 14 turnovers. They had 13. I mean, it wasn't a well-played game. It was not aesthetically pleasing in any way, shape, or form. You would not have watched that game and come away saying, boy, there's two really good teams that are going to go to the Sweet 16. You would not have thought that watching that game. So both teams played poorly. Look, Purdue was fortunate enough to win, but I do think this meeting Friday night, you're probably going to see two teams that don't really resemble much of what they looked like back in November.
It's kind of interesting that in most cases, teams will shorten their bench a little bit during the postseason. It almost seems like Matt Painter has altered his. Camden Heidi and Miles Colvin seem to be two of his favorites off the bench. Is that something where they earn those spots late in the year? Because now we've seen guys like, people that we know, Caleb First and, of course, Ethan Morton, not seeing them as much. But certainly Colvin is getting more run than we've seen almost all season.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to look it up, but there were 8, maybe 10 games where he did not even play in the game. Yeah, there's a stretch, Brett, for Miles in the month of January where he played well against Michigan in a home game, I remember, had 9 points, I think. But I don't know that he got off the bench for any other game in the month of January. I mean, he never took the warm-ups off. So the fact that, yes, now he's getting this opportunity, and the same with Camden. You know, Camden was in a unique situation there early in the season. He was playing, but it was really sporadic. It might be 3 minutes one game and 15 the next. What has happened with both of those guys is, number one, they are the two most athletic players on our team. Now, there is no questioning that. If it's just pure athleticism you're looking for, they are number one and number two. And I'm not even sure who a distant number three would be to those two guys. But the other thing they have going for them is they finally started to figure it out on the defensive end, which has always been Matt Painter's thing. You know, good, bad, or indifferent, if you can't guard, you can't play. Unless you're Carson Edwards, by the way. He was the one guy in my 19 years that couldn't guard, but he still got to play for obvious reasons. So, yes, now they know, they understand the defensive philosophies better. They're guarding in the defensive end. And then you already knew offensively they had plenty of talent. I mean, these guys are high-level scorers. But, again, the Matt Painter theory, unless you're Carson Edwards, man, which these guys aren't, you better play on the defensive end. Now they're doing that, and now they're getting that opportunity. That's not a slight to Caleb Furst. That's not a slight to Ethan Morton. They're just not the high-level scorers that these two guys are. They were better defenders, and that's why they were playing early in the season. But now that these freshmen have come around on the defensive end, you add that to the fact that they can really score the ball, it just makes more sense for them to be getting some extended minutes here in the postseason.
Last question for you, Rob, because we're almost out of time, but I do want to ask about Trey Kaufman-Wren, because to me, we saw a little bit of Purdue's preparation for if teams overly focus on Edie, what's the next option? What can we do to counter that and not try to just rely on launching threes? I thought they had a great game plan, and Trey Kaufman-Wren had a terrific day.
And that's exactly it. You hit it on the nail on the head, Brett. The two games that we played, both of those teams decided to double post to post, big to big. And when that opportunity presents itself, Zach Edey is savvy enough and a good enough passer to know that Trey Kaufman-Wren is going to be wide open on the weak side. And you saw Trey get a ton of those dump down opportunities because of that. Now, what's going to happen this week? I don't know. I can assume Gonzaga will probably try to trap big to big as well when the ball's thrown into Zach. But people look at the numbers for Trey and they'll be like, well, you know, why so sporadic? You know, oftentimes this year in the Big Ten, most teams in the Big Ten, they double down from the wing or from the guard position.
Right.
So the next play is to throw it out, as you well know, and play on the perimeter. That's not how these two teams decided to play Zach Edey this weekend. And that I mean, obviously, Trey Kaufman-Wren is salivating at that chance because he knows he's going to get the ball a bunch. But, yeah, he was huge. I mean, 18 points in one game and 11 in the other. I mean, he really played at a high level.
Enjoy your time in the Motor City. Of course, we'll be tuned in 6:30 this Friday for the pregame as Purdue takes on Gonzaga coming up Friday night in the NCAA tournament. Appreciate it, Rob.
Okay, Brett, thank you.
Yep, that is Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network from Learfield joining us here on the Sports Rush. Still got another big hour on the way, including our 15 minutes with Fish. It all comes up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.